welcome to episode 16 of All Crime, No Cattle, a Texas true crime podcast. I am Erin.
And I am Shay.
And today we've got a heartbreaking case for you presented by the one and only Shay. I'm very excited about it, but also I have a feeling I'm going to be angry and righteous at the end of this episode.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions. We need to say straight up front that our district attorney, Brienne, from the Canine Crime Unit, has warned us to, what was the term?
Alleged.
That's it. We're going to state a lot of these things are alleged that we're going to be reporting on, but we are going to stay close and tight to the facts that we're going to be reporting today. But we will make some of our own assumptions and guesses and ruminations about what we think may or may not have happened. And we'll try and make that clear the best we can. As we said, this is an unsolved case. It is the unsolved case of Haley Dunn. Do you know anything about this case, Erin?
I know a little bit.
Okay.
I know the basics. I don't know much more than that.
Okay. If you've heard about this case, which a lot of listeners may have heard some about this case because it made the rounds on the media circuit quite heavily back in the 2010 to 2011 range, our true crime associate, Nancy Grace, did quite the number on this case. So we'll get into a little bit of that later on. There's some good that came out of that. There's some bad, but we'll talk about it. But mostly my sources on this case are coming from the Crime Watch Daily, and they did a really good breakdown of the timeline of this case and all the facts, so much that we know that the authorities are working off of.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we also used a lot of sources such as CBS 7 Odessa and KTXS 12 ABC. Those are the local news affiliates. I also pulled some stuff from SanAngeloLive.com, BigCountryHomepage.com, the Odessa American, the Texas Ranger website at dps.texas.gov, and everythinglubbock.com. These are all pretty big websites in West Texas that have been reporting on this case since pretty early on.
Okay, good to know.
All right, so our case this week, it brings us to West Texas, which, have we done anything in West Texas yet?
You know, I'm not sure that we have. This might be our first West Texas case. I know we've been looking for them. We just haven't really had one that really tweaked our interest that much.
Yeah, and there are a lot of cases that I have on my list to cover in West Texas. Mm-hmm. You put me onto this one. I have a couple of other big cases I'm working on, and so I dug my teeth in. So let's start off in Colorado City, Texas, which is where this takes place.
Did you say Colorado?
Did I?
You did. I bet that's how it's pronounced. No. In West Texas, Colorado City.
Man, if anyone is from the area, which we know a couple of our friends are from West Texas, we'll have to pull them and see if...
Yeah, is it Colorado City or is it Colorado City?
It's Colorado City.
No, I'm saying how people from that town pronounce
it. I'm going to try and read it the rest of the episode, Colorado City. So
yeah,
if my Texas draw comes in... Drawl?
Nope. Drawl.
I can't even say it.
Nope.
if my Texas drawl comes in and I slip up and I say Colorado, then, you know, Colorado City, it's a small town in Texas. It's kind of the epitome of little towns in Texas that are just kind of hanging on to yesteryear, and they're really small, little tight-knit communities. It has a population of around 4,000 people. At least that's what it was during the 2010 census, which is actually when this case takes place.
Oh, wow. That is small.
Yeah, it's pretty tiny. My hometown, which is a suburb of Fort Worth, is like three times that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sits almost directly between four larger big cities. Those cities are Lubbock to the north, Midland, Odessa to the west, San Angelo to the south, and Abilene to the east. Colorado City's motto is "Oui, nous sommes heureux," which is French for "Yes, we are happy."
Heureux is happy?
I believe I'm saying that correct. My little bit of French that I took in high school and college is telling me to say heureux. Heureux.
That's, I wouldn't have thought heureux is happy. That sounds like horror. Founded a town, my town would be the little town of horror. That'd be fantastic.
Erin's little shop of horrors.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's French. I don't know why. Not really sure. I did a little bit of research. Couldn't really figure it out. They have a city museum that is sometimes open. It's highly recommended on TripAdvisor to go check out their museum because they have a massive mammoth skeleton that was found around 2001 near Colorado City.
Oh, cool.
But I've heard that it's almost never open and you have to call somebody to come unlock it and show you around.
Okay.
Yeah. Other than that, the city is also known for its state park that is by the same name, Colorado City State Park. And that's about it. Also, I'll take this moment to point out, if you hear a thunderstorm in the background, that is not an audio bed that I'm laying in. There is a thunderstorm going on while we're recording this
episode. No, we decided that this is just our new background music. It's just a weird thunderstorm.
Yeah.
And it smells like wet dog in here because their dog's been out.
The canine crime unit has been in the wetness. So they have a very distinct odor. I want to talk a little bit about Haley Dunn. She's a really popular, likable 13-year-old eighth grade cheerleader who's from Colorado City. She attended the Colorado City Middle School, where she was very active in sports, academics, and band. You know, everybody in her close family and her friends, you know, they describe her as a bright kid with a winning smile. She's very likable, lots of friends. She was very much happy with her close family. And, you know, she's a hometown girl. She spent her whole life growing up in this small town of Colorado City. She's going through her life. Everything's going pretty good for her. She's very successful. And then on December 27th, 2010, something changes. Her mother, Billie Jean Dunn, said that she was headed out to go to work in the early morning hours around 6 in the morning. Just before she headed out the door, she had a thought that popped in her head that she needed to go check on her daughter, Haley. She had to go to a 12-hour shift at her job, and she didn't want to, but she knew she had to leave 13-year-old Haley alone for a couple of hours, at least until she got up. It's winter break. It's a few days after Christmas. She's probably sleeping in, and she knew that after Haley actually woke up in a little bit, she'd probably fix herself something to eat and head down the street to her dad's house, which Billie Jean and Clint Dunn are separated at this point.
That sounds pretty typical. I think I was left at home at around the age 13, just for a few hours or whatever. It's not unheard of, for sure.
Dude, I was a straight-up latchkey kid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Dude, from, I think, like, third grade on, I had a key, and I was just on my own.
Yeah, I mean, I had an older sister, so I think usually if I was at home when I was really young, I had my older sister to look after me.
Yeah, and, you know, this becomes a point of contention later in the case because, you know, the media really kind of slams Billie Jean on this point, but I think it's pretty common, especially in small town USA. Yeah. But, you know, people bashed her for, I mean, and there's plenty of room to go around for criticizing Billie Jean later on, but this point is pretty common.
Yeah, plus a single mom, she has to work a 12-hour shift. I mean, what else is she supposed to do?
Yeah, she kind of peeks in Haley's room, checks on her. She seems fine, and she reassures herself that she'll be fine for the next few hours, heads off to work. She says that she leaves the home at around 6:10 a.m. This will be the last time that Billie Jean Dunn would reportedly see Haley alive. She returned home later that night, but Haley was not home. Someone else's home, however, it's her live-in boyfriend, Sean Atkins. Now, Sean tells Billie Jean that Haley is spending the night at a nearby friend's house. So, you know, that kind of puts her at ease a little bit, and she feels a little bit better about it. The next morning, however, Haley never came back home. So, at this point, Billie Jean calls the authorities. She starts to worry.
Okay, so the boyfriend says, I saw Haley this afternoon, or sometime during the day. She said she was going to go spend the night. Mom didn't check up on that because probably she just assumed that's what happened. And it wasn't really until the next morning when they would have expected Haley to come home that they realized. Did they call at that point, call the friend's house and figure out that Haley was not there?
Good guess, because that's exactly what they did. They called over to the friend's house. The family and the friend said that Haley was actually not ever supposed to sleep over there.
Hmm.
In fact, Haley's friend, she hadn't seen her that whole day. So Billie Jean really is worried now. She starts calling around to Haley's friends to see if they've seen her. She checks with her ex-husband, Clint, but there's no sign of Haley. Billie Jean, fearing the worst, goes ahead and contacts Colorado City Police. She's thinking maybe Haley's angry and she's run away. You know, maybe she stayed with a different friend. Maybe she has a boyfriend. Who knows? But she's worried, and they file a missing persons report. After the missing report is filed, you know, Haley still doesn't turn up the next couple of days. It jumps from being a missing persons case to a full-blown search for Haley. The reaction of the townsfolk in Colorado City and their citizens, it's pretty awesome. These volunteers, they helped do a comprehensive search of the area. They were running volunteer searches. They were handing out flyers and posting them up everywhere. They were holding group prayers and candlelight vigils outside of Haley's home, hoping for her safe return. You know, stuff like that. But it was tons of people involved.
Oh, yeah. That's a great reaction from the community. And I'm sure a reaction that you would get from such a small town where everybody knows each other. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot of people knew Haley, knew that maybe this was out of character for her and wanted to, you know, figure out where she was. So I have a question. You said that the friend's mom and the friend said that there was no discussion of Haley ever coming over. So the friend doesn't sound like the friend was trying to cover for Haley. Like Haley was lying and said, I'm going to go over here, but was really going to a boy's house or whatever. So all we have to go on at this point is that the boyfriend is claiming that Haley told him that she was going to the friend's house.
Yes.
But the friend disputes that, and we don't have any other evidence of that. Yes. It's just Haley is gone, and that's what the boyfriend says, right?
Yes. Okay. And I should also state, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions in this case, and there are a lot of rabbit holes you can go down where a lot of people have taken a lot of comments from witnesses and people from this case way out of context and come up with their own conclusions. Be careful when you go down those trails. In this case, I want you to ask that question.
I'm looking at that boyfriend with side eyes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, for sure. Nobody can corroborate his story. That is what you said is exactly right. He's the one. This is his story. There's no other witnesses that say Haley came over and said this. The friend never heard it. She hadn't seen her that whole day.
Okay.
So we'll get into more of that here in a second. So many of these volunteers, they held out hope for months and months that they were going to find Haley alive. In fact, like almost every night or at least once a week, local and national news stories were putting and dedicating large chunks of time to this story. Kind of the more this story gets out to larger and larger news outlets, it becomes bigger and bigger, and it starts to snowball. And that is doing some good because it's drawing people to the case to try and help find Haley. But like we're talking about, it's causing people to grasp at straws to figure out what happened to Haley.
Yeah, you get all the armchair detectives involved. Yeah. And there are a lot of times they don't help the situation.
And there are a lot of them in this case.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I will loosely cover right now, and I will go into some further detail later at the end of this case, is they did have bloodhounds come and track Haley's scent. They went from Billie Jean's house over to her dad's house down the street, and then to a motel like 4 blocks away. That's its own kind of rabbit hole. There's not a lot of interesting facts and details besides that. Those dog scents and dog tracking have mostly been not included in major facts and investigations in this case. We don't need to go down that detour.
But it is weird that she was tracked to a motel.
Some of the investigators have said that they can't positively confirm that those scents were...
Oh, okay. So maybe it's a situation that the dogs just got confused.
Yeah. And you know, that mostly that was media that were hearing rumors, and they were hearing, you know, they were seeing police out with dogs, going to this motel...
Oh, so that wasn't even confirmed by investigators. That's just what reporters claimed.
Yes. So,
but it hasn't been confirmed or denied. Okay.
And, you know,
it's one of these cases.
Yes,
huh?
It is. And authorities actually did go over video camera evidence at the motel and didn't find anything.
Okay.
This case, you're constantly getting just beat over the head with it of getting question and answer from volunteer groups, getting video coverage of them out in a field, like searching around, moving rocks and looking under things, the tear jerking prayer circles every night with the candles, reporters, you know, on the scene at every single search and every single news briefing that's happening. So while all that's going on, I want to focus more on what's going on in the actual investigation. So when that begins properly, It's a couple of weeks down the road. There hasn't been really any information in Haley's case. Investigators at this point, they go from a missing persons case and start ramping up their investigation into looking at people who might have done harm to Haley.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at people who had the most contact with Haley on a daily basis. And what kinds of people are those, Aaron?
Mom, dad, boyfriend.
That's it. Right there. You nailed it. So it's Billie Jean Dunn, her father, also the ex-husband, Clint Dunn, and her mother's live-in boyfriend, Sean Adkins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, man. Somebody does.
I already got suspicions of my own, but I'll keep them quiet for now.
Yeah. Although Haley reportedly loved her family and really spoke highly of her mom and dad and, you know, even Sean in some cases, to friends and other family, authorities begin to start doing a little bit of digging and learn of some other things going on in her mother's home that would suggest a little different story. According to reports from authorities, they found evidence of alleged domestic abuse as well as alleged drug use. Colorado City Police, they are familiar with Sean and Billie Jean before Haley's disappearance even happens, because they were known to get into fights with each other and often called 911 to report on each other. Almost 10 months before Haley went missing, the police were called out to deal with a domestic violence situation at the home of Billie Jean Dunn. And there is a whole day of 911 calls that you can listen to on this, where basically they're reporting on each other and saying the other one's crazy and they're attacking each other.
Oh, God.
That kind of situation.
Was Haley at home at the time?
Yes. And there's
why wasn't Haley living with the dad?
Yeah. And there, you know, there's reports that Billie Jean was going to kill herself. And then there were reports that Sean Adkins had claimed he was going to harm Billie Jean and Haley. Just back and forth.
Wow.
Those 911 calls are out there if you want to go listen to them. With this in mind, police begin to focus their investigation on Billie Jean and Sean, like, wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of know that around late January, a joint task force was created involving multiple counties of local and area police. The Texas Rangers got called in, and the local offices of the FBI became involved.
Why the FBI?
That's a big question of mine, because I think something...
Yeah, because obviously the FBI only gets involved in some cases, so I'm not...
And I'm not really sure in this task force if they were just consulting because of something in the case.
They do that a lot.
Yeah, or if...
Because if we have a small police department, which I'm assuming Colorado City has a very small police department, probably not used to the investigations of this size and nature. So that makes sense, I think.
And that's why county and area police are brought in from multiple areas to help support with the searches, as well as the detectives for the investigation part. And then the Texas Rangers are brought in initially because they're starting to expect the worst case scenario that human remains are going to be found. Once this task force starts moving forward and helping out with the case, they're able to strike through Clint, the father, as one of the primary suspects pretty quickly. They clear him as a person of interest in the case. He has an alibi. He had a very close relationship with Haley, and he's completely cooperating with the authorities. He doesn't have much in the way of a criminal background. Yeah, and his alibi checks out. So investigators request that Billie Jean Dunn and Sean Adkins come in for polygraph tests. Both of them agree to do it, so things go a little weird. When Billie Jean first appears to take her test voluntarily, it doesn't go well at all. Investigators discover she's under the influence of narcotics, and the test results, they're not conclusive.
Do they know what kind of narcotics? Are they like downers to where she's trying to influence her responses?
That's a great question. And I don't know.
Okay.
The only thing that's really reported in this is that at some point during the exam, they suspected that she was in fact under the influences of some narcotic.
Well, okay. So, you know, devil's advocate, this is a mother who is, her child is missing, and somebody who, you know, already maybe has drug abuse issues maybe.
Yeah.
I would imagine the amount of stress and grief you would be in would cause you to maybe be trying to take things and do things you otherwise wouldn't in order to kind of get through the mental anguish you're going through. So, okay, devil's advocate.
Sure.
Maybe that's not suspicious.
And there's a lot of people on the other side with knee-jerk reactions saying, oh, well, clearly she did it. She's trying to take drugs to cover up the polygraph.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that that's conclusive or anything, but...
Nothing is really conclusive yet. So.
Yeah, no, not at all.
So either way, however the police discovered that she was under the influence, they told her to go home and to return sober to take the test, you know, properly.
Mm-hmm.
Billie Jean Dunn does so, and the test goes successfully, and she told Crime Watch Daily in a big interview that she was shocked when the results came back. All Billie Jean Dunn was told by authorities regarding her test results were that, quote, deception was indicated. They didn't really tell her where or on,
yeah, which
on
questions.
What questions.
Okay.
And again, you can knee-jerk reaction on this, but we don't know what it is until it all comes out, mm-hmm. and exactly where the deception was indicated. Now, Colorado City authorities take these results as a reason to dig deeper, and a search warrant is issued for Billie Jean Dunn's residence, wherein, quote, a disturbing amount of questionable literature was found, end quote. Billie Jean and Sean had apparently been collecting hundreds of printed pages of information profiling various serial killers and mass murderers. This were all found in a box, and they're like printed sheets. They even had research on murderers that were in their families. When questioned by authorities, Billie Jean Dunn said, quote, oh, that's just a hobby for us. We enjoy studying about these things. And, like, this is our worst nightmare. That something.
I was about to say, wait a minute, now that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Now, and this is, we've talked about this, like, loosely on a couple of episodes, but man, again, if anything ever happened to us, the other one is going to be immediately fingered for it.
100%.
Yeah.
Something better happen to both of us, because the other one is bound to get arrested.
Yeah. I guess the best way to, oh, well, we really shouldn't talk about the best way to cover up our murder.
No, let's not do that. Yeah, so, okay. I mean, it's a little weird. Hey, why don't you go to the library and check out some books? Like, it's kind of weird that they're printing off pages and like reams of pages of about serial killers.
Yeah.
That's a little odd. I mean, yeah. It's 2010. You have the computer. Who prints manuscripts anymore? Or like, yeah, it's kind of odd. But I mean, it's definitely not. I mean, I think those of us who are us and our listeners wouldn't think to harshly on that. That's nothing out of the world.
Well, what Billie Jean Dunn told Crime Watch Daily back in January of 2017 was, anything to make me look bad was what the authorities were trying to do. I mean, I'm not the only true crime fanatic. I'm not the only viewer that you have, meaning Crime Watch Daily.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's a pretty good point.
No, it is. Yeah.
So Clint Dunn also spoke to Crime Watch Daily in a pretty lengthy interview. And he kind of gave his thoughts as to why Billie Jean and Sean were studying up on serial killers. He said they were doing a lot of research for some reason. And it's just awful peculiar. They did all this research and then Haley goes missing.
I mean, to me, no.
Yeah. Clint goes on to talk more about Sean. And he says since Haley went missing, he spoke with many of Sean's friends from high school who remembered Sean as, quote, strange and obsessed with serial killers. Wouldn't that be a good description for you?
I was about to say that is exactly how people at my high school would have described me. So,
yeah.
Let's all calm down for a second.
Yeah. And he also goes on to say he believes Billie Jean had some amount of involvement in Haley's disappearance. And he's basing that on a statement of because all the actions she made during the first week after she went missing. Now, what he's talking about is that they got a lot of criticism because they threw a New Year's Eve party 4 days after she went missing. You know, he only lives right down the street. And he says he was on his back porch with binoculars, you know, kind of watching the area at night, kind of seeing, you know, if he saw any weird people walking around. And he's obsessing over Haley's disappearance. And he saw people arriving at their home, bringing beer and partying.
So did Billie Jean ever have anything to say in regards to that?
Oh, yeah. So she's come back and said that, you know, this New Year's Eve party situation was completely blown out of proportion, that it wasn't a New Year's Eve party. It was a group of close family and friends that were actually meeting together to relax a little bit and try and get over Haley's disappearance. I don't know if I buy that.
I mean, yeah, again, these kind of cases are so hard because you could argue either way, and I think I could see it. I mean, on Clint's side, if he was looking into their house and he was seeing people laughing, having fun, drinking beer, that would be completely abnormal.
Oh, I'd be pissed.
And out of the ordinary. However, I can see on the flip side, yeah, you know, we just had a few people come over. They were trying to support us, trying to, you know, maybe for one evening, help us forget. Or maybe they were all just sitting around talking around stories about Haley and all saying, you know, we're going to find her. And, you know, you don't know what's going on. And a group of a small group of people coming over in your like the worst moments of your life. That's not.
Hey, and, you know, going back to our talk about if you're already using narcotics and you're put into a grief situation.
You're going to go back to that.
Yeah. If you're already using alcohol, same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So again, you know, we don't have anything solid.
Yep.
But we just have a lot of hatred kind of being spewed from different angles.
You want to hear some more unsolid, unfounded things?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, man, this case. Clint Dunn, I don't want to paint him, you know, in this perfect father figure role because there are some questions about him. We can go back to the scent trail that goes to his house. Mm-hmm. And he reports that Haley never came to his house that day.
Do you know if the dogs, of course, I guess we don't know this for sure because the investigators never really talked about this, but I wonder if the dogs tracked her literally to his door and even into the house, or they just tracked her like going past the house or something like that. Well, and
people have brought things up that she was known to practice athletics out in the front yard, you know, play, do her cheers, stuff like that out in the front yard. I mean, could the dogs just be picking up on her scent from in and around the home? Because it was her.
It was so close.
Yeah, it's
so close. And she probably made that walk, what, every day or something?
All the time,
or...
yeah. It's right down the street.
Yeah. Okay.
Something I want to bring up is Clint Dunn did not participate in the volunteer searches for Haley. Nor was he handing out any of the flyers or posting them up anywhere. And his excuse for this is he said he didn't want to find his daughter's body out in the country. And he claimed he was searching throughout the town proper for Haley, and in alleyways and in dumpsters.
What? Is that a direct quote from him?
Yes.
I don't understand what his point is.
He's saying, like, I don't either. Like, I don't know if he's trying to say he doesn't want to find his daughter's body out in the country. But, I mean, if you find her in a dumpster, like, isn't that kind of worse?
If he already has an expectation that she's dead, you're going to want to find her regardless, and maybe putting up those flyers and getting the word out might help you find her before she's dead.
Yes.
Okay, now, that 100% does not make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And also, one more thing regarding Clint is that with his interview with Crime Watch Daily, they questioned him about an anonymous source close to Clint that reported that Haley did, in fact, at some point that day, arrive at his home before she went missing. Clint claimed that this is a false statement by the anonymous witness, and it's just simply not true, and he bolsters this statement with the fact that authorities never have considered him a prime suspect and have cleared him several times. So take what you will with that.
So maybe the anonymous caller or the anonymous tipster was the mom or the boyfriend who are trying to throw shade at him.
You know, it could be because there are a ton of tipsters in this case.
Yeah, there always are.
Yeah, well, this case still has, I think, up to a $3,000 reward for any information. Yeah. And I think at one point the family was someone close to the family was offering $5,000 or $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm surprised it's so low.
Well, it's been a while. And, you know, now that I think it was higher when there was hope they might find her.
Uh-huh.
But I think now it's been a while, so I think the amount has gone down closer to some of the other unsolved cases in the state. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But there is an active Crime Stoppers and cash reward tip line system going on. So, you know, they're getting flooded just like you always do with crazy tips from psychics and people from all over the country. All right. So we've talked a little bit about Billie Jean's issues. We've talked a little bit about Clint's story. Let's get into Sean Atkins.
Oh, let's.
Okay. According to interviews done, again, with Crime Watch Daily, the first two times Sean tried to take the polygraph, he struggled to complete the exam. He would get up, he would get angry and frustrated, and just walk out, which I didn't even know you could do. Like, once you agreed to do a polygraph exam, I didn't know you could just get up and leave.
I mean, I guess they're not going to physically restrain you, but...
And in fact, you know, his lawyer backed him up later on and agreed with him getting up and leaving, because he said that the investigators were coming at him too hard and were trying to draw emotional responses out of him in the polygraph exam, which, as we know, can give false positives in polygraphs.
Okay.
So on the third time that Sean took the exam, he was able to complete it. However, authorities did detect that he showed several signs of deception. They also noted that he was telling the truth on a couple of occasions on interesting questions, and a couple of those questions have been released. One of the questions was when investigators straight up asked him, "Where can we find Haley?" And he said, "Somewhere in Scurry County." Then they asked him, "Who should we be looking at in this?" And he said, "You should be looking at us," meaning him and Billie Jean. Now, his lawyer will come back and say he was upset, he was getting emotional, and they were arguing back and forth and kind of getting into a yelling match during this final polygraph exam. And he was just saying something to get it over with. And he was kind of like throwing the questions back in the investigators' faces.
Okay. Where is Scurry County? Is that the county that Colorado City is in?
Scurry County is a little bit to the northwest of Colorado City. So okay. It's nearby. In fact, it's about 20 miles away.
Okay, well then that's awfully specific. All right, so that's weird. I mean, the second question, I can see him kind of saying that, being a smartass. Oh, you should be looking at us, because he's saying, well, we are the closest people in her lives. So yeah, you should be looking at us. I mean, I can see it, you know, somebody trying to explain that away, and that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think also one of the explanations about the Scurry County was he said that he was just throwing a place out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, I guess.
So at this point, Billie Jean was actually asked by the investigators to go into the examination room and try and get more information out of Sean after his responses to their questions had given them some interesting information. And they kind of tell Billie Jean what they found and what he said, and she complies.
That's weird. I didn't know that they did that. It sounds like something you'd see at in a really bad like police cop show.
Yeah.
I didn't know that this is something that they allowed. Okay.
And about this, Billie Jean says, quote, "They made me go in there, so I did. I felt faintish after asking him, 'Where's my baby? Where's my baby? You failed your test. Where's my baby?'" And, you know, they really didn't get any further information out of Sean at this point. So even though all of this new information is coming to light, it's a really weird experience, these polygraph tests and the results that are coming out. Sean continues to stay in Billie Jean's home, and that prompts further questions about their relationship and their involvement in the case.
Yeah.
So a few days go past, authorities show up at Billie Jean's home to serve a search warrant. Now, it's not really clear initially if the search warrant is for Billie Jean's home, but they're there to see if Sean Atkins is home. And they have a search warrant for Sean Atkins.
Okay, so because they've already searched the house once, maybe they were looking for other things. And now that they've maybe gotten a wider scope of a search warrant, and now they're looking for other things that might be,
you're right on,
related to their answers during their polygraph tests or any other further investigation that they've done.
And I'm going to tell you exactly what they were looking here in a minute. Billie Jean told authorities that Sean wasn't home. And they kind of get into a discussion at the door. And they said, well, if he's not home, then you don't have any problem with us coming in. And Billie Jean lets him in the home. Now, once investigators got inside, they quickly discovered that Sean was in fact home, and he was hiding in the home.
Okay.
Now, instead of taking...
It's a weird thing to lie about.
It's also interesting because the person who ends up getting taken and arrested is Billie Jean. She's arrested for lying about Sean's whereabouts. And also because she has prescription medication in the home that she doesn't have a valid prescription for. She goes to the jail and she posts a $6,000 bail. And a little bit later, Billie Jean receives a 90-day jail sentence and a year of probation for this offense. John Young is Billie Jean's attorney. And about this whole situation, he says this was really a non-issue. They wanted to ask where Sean was. She said, he's not here. She opened the door for them. It was a non-issue. We went in and we accepted complete responsibility for not being completely honest. It was really, I believe, more of an effort to place pressure on Billie Jean for the prescription offense than anything else. somewhere around this time, Billie Jean's kind of had it with Sean. And probably the jail sentence, probably all the pressure that's coming down on her from authorities, you know, to tell them everything that she knows about Sean. They're really focused on him. She starts to cooperate fully. The dwindling support that Billie Jean had shown for Sean completely crumbled. It may have been the added pressure by the task force, but if you ask Billie Jean, she claimed it was when Sean Atkins was named as the major suspect in the case. Either way, that's when her continued support for her boyfriend completely ended. Billie Jean demanded that Sean Atkins move out. It's later revealed that the reason the police showed up to Billie Jean's house with their warrant was not to search Billie Jean's home. It was, in fact, a body search of Sean Atkins. That's why they were so intent on finding him. Do you want to know what they were looking for?
Of course.
This search warrant was issued to search for devices that contained digital evidence on Sean's person. The reason why is, according to the BigCountryHomepage.com, they discovered an affidavit from police that had shown several search warrants had been issued for devices that contained child pornographic material. Initially, these were found at Sean's mom's home when a search was done there, and he was not aware. They initially found Sean's cell phone, a USB memory stick that he owned, a computer belonging to Sean's mother, as well as a secondary computer. The computer at his mother's home contained almost 109,000 images of child porn, bestiality, and deviant acts. The affidavit noted that some child porn images retrieved from the memory stick and the cell phone owned by Atkins, which was on his person, were made with a Kodak EasyShare camera. The document goes further to state that child pornographic materials were also discovered in Sean Atkins' email account. At least one of these images found in his mother's computer matched the image found in Sean's emails, and they were both made with a Kodak EasyShare camera.
So wait, are you saying that he not only just possessed child pornography, but it sounded like he was manufacturing child pornography as if he was the one taking the photos with this camera?
What does Brienne say about this case?
Alleged, alleged, alleged.
This is just what was stated in the affidavit. That's all we know. But I tend to lean the direction of the point that you're trying to make about this alleged idea.
So do we know any more about that in particular? Do they know who these children were?
That's all the information I have for you. Unfortunately.
So that's all that's been released.
Yep. And, you know, this is one of the infuriating parts of this case and what drives people up the wall, specifically regarding Sean Atkins and his involvement in this case. And this is probably one of the big blocks of the foundation of many of the movements to move forward and charge Sean Atkins. It's because of the hatred that this particular fact in the case draws out of people. And I understand.
Right now I'm choked with anger.
I completely get it. Yep.
I feel physically mad right now.
And you know, what's going to make you even more mad is charges are never filed on these pornographic images. In fact, there is a grand jury hearing that eventually does happen. And some people point to a change.org petition that got started that called for this grand jury hearing to charge someone about these pornographic images, but they never charge anyone.
Did you ever read anything about those grand jury proceedings?
I couldn't find anything about it.
Because they should be public if they're grand jury proceedings.
I searched around.
Is that true?
I don't know if that's true. Especially,
I know the grand jury proceedings are different than court documents, so.
Especially if the Texas Rangers and the FBI are involved, and there could be information involved with those charges that could alter the investigation of this particular case, They might be holding off, waiting to stack those charges in with a murder charge, if that is the case. Alleged, alleged, alleged.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're thinking is the current state of things.
That's what I'm thinking, and that's what most of the sources that I've read have said.
Okay.
We can talk about that all we want, but something we can also do is we can go back and look at the details of the day of Haley's disappearance and Sean's activities. According to the police affidavit, they go into what Sean told people, police, and family members about what happened that day. Specifically, he told a lot of people that he had been fired from his job the day Haley disappeared, and that he left work early, around 6 in the morning. Remember, that's the time that Billie Jean left the home to go to her 12-hour shift. This was, in fact, quite different from the truth. Upon further investigations by the authorities, Sean's boss told them, quote, he came in at 6 in the morning and went into the break room, bought a Dr. Pepper, and his supervisor went in. He just looked at him and left at about 6:10, basically walking off the job on the clock to anyone else paying attention, openly quitting your job.
Huh. So nobody says that they had any interaction with him. He didn't say anything. He was just like, and then he just like left without saying a word.
He walked in, bought a pop, and popped out.
Why would he lie about that?
Well, you know, his initial story has changed numerous times over the years in follow-up investigations. And this is why he continues to be a major suspect in this case.
Because almost him saying that he was fired that morning almost makes it look worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because you would say, okay, somebody who just got fired, he's angry, he's vengeful, he's powerless. And what would you want to do, you know, a bad person want to do in that situation? Maybe hurt somebody else. So that actually makes him look worse than the truth, which is he just got fed up and left his job.
It's worth mentioning here that Sean says later on that he lied about quitting his job so that it would look better that he got fired. And he didn't want to admit to Billie Jean that he walked off the job.
That's really weird. What kind of person thinks that it's better to get fired as opposed to just quit?
Yeah. And, you know, it begs the question, why did you lie to police about that, too?
Yeah. How long did that lie go on before he finally admitted that it was indeed a lie?
I think after the first affidavit came out and then police come back for secondary questioning, like once he becomes the primary suspect, they start questioning him further. And then he's like, well, that's actually not the truth, blah, blah, blah. Huh. And that's when we start to see these several changes.
Such a weird little thing to lie about that it makes you kind of wonder what else is an untruth.
Yep. So yeah, the one of the few times that Sean actually does speak to the media about all these things, about his story changing, the affidavits coming out, he does so for a very long time, but it's really weird. He's wearing sunglasses and he just rambles on about all these different changes in his story over time. If you're interested, you should go check it out. But, you know, be warned, this is one of the things that a lot of people put a lot of credence into about the case. And, you know, there's whole 45-minute long analyses of this video by other armchair detectives. And that's because, you know, the whole time he's kind of smirking, he's giving all these responses in regards to himself, and he doesn't seem to really care about Haley and getting the focus of the story back on finding Haley and getting Haley home. He's more concerned about him. And those are the critiques that people want to bring up who have watched this video and picked it apart and done their own analysis.
Okay, maybe that's something that we can post and maybe just throw out there and have people sort of see it and make their own minds up about what to think about that interview.
Yeah. So holes in Sean's story, they start popping up. He told authorities and Billie Jean he didn't go back to their home that morning, but that he returned home around 3:15 p.m. that afternoon. And that's when he had a meeting with Haley, and she told him that she was going to go stay at a friend's house and left.
But the assumption by the mom was that she would have gotten up earlier that morning and gone straight to the dad's house.
At least for a while, yeah. Because she typically did that. Yeah.
And dad says he never saw her. So that's already very iffy.
Yes. And
it's allegedly iffy.
Also, if he didn't go back home, where did he go? So if you ask Sean, he says that he went over to Big Springs, which is it's kind of to the west of Colorado City. And his mom lives over in that area.
So is he saying that he went to visit his mom? Or he just went back to his hometown?
I mean, you're asking all the right questions.
Just speculation, but it sounds like he's trying to make his location vague enough to where, oh, nobody really saw me, but I was out of town at the moment where anything bad could have happened to Haley. Because he's not claiming I went to see my mother, and mom could either deny or approve that statement. He's just saying, oh, I was in another city.
Yeah, I was in Big Springs. I was doing some stuff over there. And you know, and his story continues to change, and he is not very cooperative with authorities. And You know, another big thing is we haven't heard officially everything that was in that polygraph and in that initial statement. A lot of the things, like we said, in this case are very close to the vest. Authorities are actively investigating this case.
Yeah, of course. As well, they should be.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to know every single little detail because those details are important in prosecuting a case.
And yeah, I mean,
that's the most important part.
But what we do know is that Sean's cell phone that we talked about earlier, that they were looking for in the search warrant, not only were they looking for pornographic material, but they also wanted the cell phone for something else. They wanted to look at cell phone pinging.
Oh, where he was that day. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. They wanted to fit a timeline and kind of corroborate or disprove what Sean was saying. So the task force began researching cell phone pinging information on that phone number. What they found out about his whereabouts during different parts of the day when Haley went missing is interesting. Investigators said that the cell phone ping data showed Sean visited Colorado City that day at a time Haley likely would have been home alone. The cell phone ping data indicated that Sean did, in fact, return to the home that morning after walking out on his job unexpectedly, and he did, in fact, make it over to Big Springs eventually, but not until around 9:30 a.m., according to the cell phone pinging. So that leaves about a three-hour window where Sean's whereabouts are unaccounted for, and his cell phone pinged right near their home in Colorado City. Does that all make sense?
No, that makes sense. Yeah, so that's saying completely different things than what he claimed.
Yeah.
Where he was not even in the city that morning.
Yeah, and I should also be clear that his job is in Snyder, which is north of Colorado City, and there's a direct route down a highway that goes to Big Springs. So if he went to Colorado City, he was going out of his way.
Yeah, it's two completely different directions. So it's not like he maybe passed through Colorado City to get to Big Springs. These are two different directions.
Yeah, it's not equidistant.
Yeah.
It's putting more time into your journey for a reason that he doesn't give.
Uh-huh.
At this point in the story, it's important to introduce Haley's brother, David Dunn. He didn't really play a role so much in the early investigations, but on further inspection, with more digging by the authorities, and specifically in this police affidavit that we're talking about that got released, David Dunn talked to authorities, and he said that he was at home that day and saw Sean in Colorado City. He said that he showed up at the house around 4 p.m., and David arrived at the home and found the front door locked with the deadbolt. He could not get in with his key. In fact, he found all the doors bolted. He thought that was weird, so he knocked on the door, and he figured Haley was home or somebody else was home. Nobody came to the door. So he's like, well, that's weird. And he goes to a window that's unlocked, pops it open, climbs inside, comes out of a room, and finds Sean down the hallway looking, quote, like a deer in the headlights. Now, I've looked for more on this, but that's all that we know about this particular instance where David saw him in the home at 4 p.m. Now, remember, he told police that he came back to the house at 3:15. So
yeah, and that's when Haley told him she was going to go visit her friend.
If we're playing devil's advocate, we can say that that fits into Sean's timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where I'm going to make a rumination. This is totally my opinion. But if something had happened to Haley and he had decided to go back and clean up and lock the house and scrub the house down or get rid of any evidence, why else would you have the entire house locked down like that and not answer the door?
We don't know the relationship between David and Sean. Maybe they really weren't on good terms. So maybe Sean just didn't want to have anything to do with him, didn't answer the door.
Yeah.
But it is
I thought it was important
weird,
to bring
and
up.
And it would be interesting to know exactly what their words were with each other.
I want to know what happened next because David ended up leaving.
And yeah, so what happened? What was that conversation between them? Hey, where's Haley? What are you doing? Why are the doors locked?
Yeah,
you know, and anything like that.
And it's something where David mentioned this to his dad later on and was like, hey, something weird happened that day. And this is what happened. And it's kind of sticking out in my mind.
Yeah.
Haley's uncle also drops a little tidbit of information regarding Sean that we know about from this affidavit. He was interviewed by authorities and he said, you know, Sean really liked to hunt and he really liked to talk about hunting. He's a big hunter. And he specifically liked to talk about how he would cut up and dismember his deer carcasses, and he would use a chainsaw, and he liked to bring this up a lot. Well, on one instance, when he was talking to Sean, this is Haley's uncle, he said, "I can't believe anyone would hurt a 13-year-old girl," kind of saying that, you know, he didn't really know what to say to the family, and he's kind of talking to Sean about it. Well, Sean replied with a really weird comment, quote, "Yeah, it's like killing a deer."
No, it's not, Sean. Those are two totally different things.
Now, I don't know if he was meaning like a doe, like a young deer, like you just don't do
no,
that.
No, he didn't but, say that. He said a deer.
Yeah, and it's really weird. Like, yeah, it's a really strange thing to say.
Especially for a hunter who is an avid killer of deer.
Mm-hmm. All right, so moving on. Pretty much the investigation is constantly going on for the next couple of years. They're doing more digging. They're doing more looking at the cell phone data. You know, they're doing more searches. They're looking, and you know how hard it is to charge someone with a murder if you don't have a body. So the body becomes a really big focus at this point, and they're actively running these volunteer searches like all year long. Well, on March 16th, 2013, a rock hunter is hiking near Lake J.B. Thomas, and he stumbled across parts of a human skull and a femur. It's in a remote area about 20 miles northwest of Colorado City. Do you want to guess what county?
Scurry County.
You nailed it. The lake is located halfway between Sean Atkins' former place of employment in Snyder, Texas, and where authorities say that his cell phone pinged in Big Springs around 9:30 a.m. Now recall the strange answer that he gave in his polygraph test, which I bet you were referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've also gotten another little tidbit from authorities and Clint Dunn in recent reports from some of the Texas Rangers and FBI that have been working with Clint Dunn. Again, he's been very cooperative and been involved in the investigation. Clint Dunn dropped that cell phone pings from Sean's phone were actually detected by authorities right in the area of Lake J.B. Thomas on the day that Haley disappeared. Now, it's a pretty wide open area where the bones were found. It's kind of this beach area on the lake. I guess if you're an avid rock hunter and you're looking for like nice beach rocks, you'd be over there, and I guess that's how he found it. But it is kind of a weird place. I guess it's sandy. It's easy to bury something.
Are you saying that the way that she was found was suspicious?
No. And in fact, people were suspicious of this rock hunter because he came forward and he did want the reward money for finding remains, which it's warranted. He found the remains.
Yeah.
And there was also some questions because FBI really took
calm down about it. Don't be that excited about it, bud. But
yeah, he did complain because the FBI took their time giving him his money, which, hey, you're involved in a murder investigation at that point. Maybe calm down on the money part.
Right.
I mean, good Samaritan and all. Hey, thanks. Appreciate that. But, you know, chill out with the money, bro.
Well, can we take a second to talk about the fact that that's really sad?
Yeah, it is.
13 years old.
Yeah, 13-year-old, you know, in the prime of her almost high school years.
She hasn't even started life.
And by all accounts, a great, wonderful person that everybody liked. That's probably why she had so many people championing her cause. And, you know, my only hope in this is that, and the family and the friends have mentioned this, that, you know, that's the big drive now, is that remains have been found. We can move forward in the case. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the remains a little bit. They've said that skull remains and a femur were found. I really haven't seen anywhere that go into detail on the bones, and I know that that's something that you would be interested in knowing, but I think it's going to come out once the full investigation is released. What we do know about it, though, is that one tooth was found.
Okay.
And that tooth's dental records matched Haley's. To Haley's. So on May 13th...
Can you match dental records with just a single tooth?
I'm sorry.
They might have done DNA testing and just haven't released it. Yeah.
Well, Billie Jean's lawyer has also mentioned that they have been matched by DNA results as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Now, on April 26th, that's when her remains were announced and the family's notified. Clint and Billie Jean are both notified that it's a positive identification. Both parents, they were obviously, you know, really sad. At this point, it had been so long since she had gone missing. They had both started to accept the worst, you know, and They did say that this brought them a lot of closure, but that they felt empowered to find who did this to Haley, mm-hmm. which I think is...
To move on to the next step.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They wanted to eventually get to an arrest and find who was responsible for her death. Authorities are still questioning where are the rest of her remains. And something that Sean said, and again, this is my opinion, the cutting up the deer carcasses with a chainsaw. That sticks out to me.
Well, first of all, you wouldn't... I don't know anybody who dismembers deer carcasses with a chainsaw.
I don't know. If we have listeners out there that are into butchering deers, maybe...
That sounds a little go get 'em. I don't...
But it also seems efficient. God, yeah, we're talking about a victim, too. And, like, I hate to think that that happened to her.
Well, again, and I don't want to be too graphic or anything, but...
We don't know anything for sure.
If there is... a question of dismemberment and the fact that there are pieces of her body that were not found altogether. I don't mean to be graphic again. I'm sorry, but it is odd that we're finding skull fragments and also fragments of the upper thigh. To me, that's a little odd. I mean, if you're talking about, I'll say this, it does sound like it might be a situation where we have scavengers, carnivores getting to the body. I mean, it doesn't even sound like it has to be dismemberment.
Yeah.
It might just be we're talking about animal activity. I mean, it's been months.
Yeah. And you know, that's...
Or maybe, was it years before she was actually found? It was years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, there's a lot that can happen to a deceased person post-death,
remember,
years after the fact, being out in the wilderness. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, honestly, with that little information, we can't really say anything.
Yeah, I remember she went missing in December of 2010, and her remains were found on March 16th of 2013.
Yeah.
So,
A little over two years.
A little bit over 2 years.
But that's a long time for things to happen.
It is. Especially, you know, if the lake flooded, then you could talk about water.
Exactly. Depending on how close she was to the water's edge, yeah, absolutely, flooding of the lake could have affected what happened.
Speed of the decay of the remains, and we always know that.
Well, also, it could have carried things away.
Oh, yeah,
so
dispersed
there could
yeah.
be remains, you know, that are now in the lake. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, it sounds like it very much has the potential that she was just dumped there, and maybe not dismembered.
Yeah,
I feel very sad though.
Yeah, well, you should. No one should be happy about this case.
Yeah.
If you're happy about this case, stop the episode, go to your psychologist, go to your counselor, have a good long talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on May 13th, 2013, hundreds of mourners gathered at the middle school where Haley attended classes. They held kind of a impromptu memorial with her remains in absentia. You know, her remains were shipped off to UNT's medical laboratories where they were examined, and they actually stayed there in a lab on a shelf for a long time. And that becomes another big part of this case, is there's a really big support group and an upheaval that happens from the community to get her remains back so that she can be buried. And Billie Jean Dunn, she's starts a kind of a movement and a campaign, talking to the media and going on several interviews about bring Haley home. And, you know, she implores that she wants to have a place to put Haley, and she wants to get matching plots where they can one day rest next to each other, and, you know, definitely making her case to get Haley home. Well, so early last year, it was finally announced in January of 2017 that they were going to be returning the family Haley's remains.
It's really odd to me why they felt the need to keep her remains for so long.
Yeah, I was wondering
because
that too.
After confirming the body and after doing whatever,
how long does it take?
Testing they needed to do, taking photographs, indicating, you know, natural damage versus any sort of damage that could have been done that killed her. I don't know why you would need to keep them beyond that.
Yeah. I mean,
that's very weird to me. Unless there was something else that they were holding out.
Maybe there was something in those skull fragments that was maybe showing a weapon or, you know, some kind of information that was leading investigators down a path where they were possibly trying to get every single bit of information before they went ahead and turned the remains over to be buried so that they wouldn't have to exhume her body.
Exactly. In order for new experts to come and look at her.
Yeah.
Look at those remains again in order to give their opinions.
Yeah. And we're talking about the FBI and the Texas Rangers, who are some of the best forensic investigators in the world, who are handling this study.
And this investigation. And that's the thing. There's a big difference in looking at photographic evidence of remains and trying to make interpretations based on that versus actually looking at the remains themselves and making your own unbiased interpretations. So maybe that was their thing. We're going to put this on a shelf. We're going to keep this until this case is closed. And then the family was like, what the hell? You're making this even harder on us. Please give us our daughter back, which is totally understandable.
Totally understandable. And that's, you know, the point they were making was this is part of our healing process. This is part of our closure.
100%.
You know, and like, how could you ever have closure in a case like this? You know,
you want your daughter to be home.
Yeah. And
not in a box in a lab.
Exactly. And people talk about that when they discuss the idea of closure in a case like this, that you're forever a victim and that there really is not a lot of closure in cases like this.
No, a lot of victims and victims' families do not like that word.
Yes, definitely.
It marks an end, and there's no end to your pain and your grief. It just, you hope to move on and move forward.
But what other victims in similar cases like this do say is that this is a milestone to the next step of coping with your grief.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's a very important step for the family. So Haley Dunn was laid to rest in a small private ceremony with just family. And it's probably best because sometimes those things turn into a media circus.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's a couple of other things in this case that I want to talk about before we get to our conclusions. And they're what I'm terming my red herrings.
Okay.
So one of the red herrings that I didn't bring up earlier is the night before Haley goes missing. There is $140 that is pulled out of the accounts of Billie Jean and Sean Atkins.
$140 total?
Total.
Between their two accounts?
Yes. Okay. And reportedly, they admitted that this money was used to buy narcotics. So a lot of people have taken this red herring, and if you don't, you should know what a red herring is.
It's a fish.
Well, and the logical fallacy, it's a fish that's pulled across the trail of a scent to draw the dogs off so that they don't follow the fox in the fox hunting competition. And that's what I'm referring to. There are people who run with this ATM transaction and they go crazy places. Okay. They go to money that was owed to debtors of both of these individuals who are involved with drug deals. You know, they start involving people from prison who have tried to get into the Crime Stoppers tip line about, oh, they know a guy who knew a person who was in the house when Haley was abducted, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So,
wait, some people are claiming that the $140 was taken to pay off drug debts? You think a drug dealer is going to be happy with $140 payments if they're looking for big money?
Now, what I do think is interesting is, you know, if they did take out some money and went and bought some kind of narcotic and got really high and something bad happened to Haley and the rest is just covering up what happened to her, I could buy that.
Yeah.
But again, these are all crazy out there theories in the mist of true crime. So
exactly.
Don't take any of this as fact, but you can see what I'm talking about these rabbit holes that people go down.
Oh yeah.
You know, we talked a little bit about the bloodhound searches, man. Nancy Grace in her interviews really hammers the cell phone pings, the mom's cell phone, you know, all kinds of cell phone records that lots of people want to go into, but she really hits on the motel and the bloodhounds, and there's not a lot there. I mean, you can go listen to Nancy Grace all you want. Her show's great for true crime enthusiasts. A lot of people like it, but in this particular instance, a lot of people don't. And in this particular instance, like, there's just not a whole lot there. You know, I mean, it is interesting. It's kind of like what we're doing right now. We're just kind of throwing stuff up on the wall and seeing if it sticks.
Yeah.
But don't take it as fact, like people on these forums. Jeez, they want to cite that episode of Nancy Grace and like pick apart every way that Billie Jean answers a question and go, oh, because that's why she's guilty. The way she said this question, right?
Yeah. Nope. Doesn't work like that. No, it doesn't. That's not how life works.
That's not how true crime works. That's not how a real investigation works or, you know, forensics.
No.
All right. That's my major red herrings. There's also this really weird dude on YouTube that is convinced it's all an FBI cover-up by the same FBI members that tried to kill him in El Paso 10 years previously.
Oh, God.
Well, he has like a 45-minute episode that I kind of watched a little of. And I kind of forgot that I was alive for a minute and I just got sucked into it. And then, you know, I was like, what am I doing with my life? I went back to researching facts.
Oh, that's good.
But he was like mesmerizing with his lunacy. Go watch that. It's fun. But don't take any of it as fact.
Yeah, this is what we get into these unsolved cases. And, you know, God bless people who want to look at things online and they want to light a fire under detectives' butts and they want to help with cases as best they can. And there is something to be said for kind of like crowdsourcing aspects of an investigation. We know that sometimes that has panned out and people online have found out information that has helped in cases. We know that's true. But we also know that there are a lot of crazy people out there who want to make a name and they want to have their opinions that are absolutely ludicrous and have and end up making a mockery of a child's death. And that this is what we need to focus on. This was a 13-year-old little girl.
Yes.
And it's really sad. I feel very upset. I want to cry.
I know, dude. It's a sad case.
It's very sad. And we, I don't, in my opinion, I don't think we need to go all these crazy places to know probably what happened to her. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to say what I think probably happened to her. I think probably you can guess. I don't know why this is still unsolved. I don't know why we don't have an arrest.
To follow that up, you want to hear what I think?
Yeah.
I think we should let the Texas Rangers and the FBI do their job. And I hope and I pray to the true crime gods that it's in the good hands that we think it is and that they're doing diligent work to make this charge when it comes and the arrest unescapable. That's what I hope.
And there must be things that we don't know that is getting in the way of solving this case.
Yeah.
There must be things that we just don't know about and we will find out later, hopefully sooner than later. Hopefully we will get a resolution to this because justice needs to be done when it comes to a little girl dying.
Yeah. And we'll be sure to, you know, when that information comes out, we'll let you guys know, you know.
Yeah. Again, hopefully
we might have to have a follow-up episode on this one when we have the entire case before us.
Well, I'm glad you went over that. Like I said, I knew the details. I already knew kind of who the suspects were. What we've gone over today has made me, like I said, I feel sick to my stomach and I feel very upset. So yeah.
I don't know how many.
It's a horrifically sad case and it's one that everybody needs to know about. And maybe, yeah, if we do need to pressure people into making things happen, maybe that is a good thing. Maybe we as civilians need to say, hey, this isn't acceptable. What is going on? Because to some degree,
yeah,
there are questions that need to be answered. Why haven't things moved on?
There's a lot of questions that need to be answered about that. And, you know, you have remains now.
Yeah.
So you can't.
I mean, we can trust in law enforcement and all of those officials as much as we can. And we do. And I do.
Yeah.
It comes to a point where it's like, okay, what's the holdup?
Yeah, and that's...
What is going on? We need to know because whoever did this is still out there.
Yep. And that's what's going to make when everything does come out and there is someone charged in this case. It was going to be like a relief, like a load off of people's shoulders to see what's been going on. You know, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'd like to conclude with some of the statements, you know, from Billie Jean and Clint that they've made in recent years. Billie Jean has said, quote, I'm a mom with a murdered child and nobody's been held responsible. And I can't die not knowing somebody's been held accountable. God will hold that person accountable. But I want to see it. And I've vowed to my daughter that I won't stop. I'm going to find your killer. It's my job to take care of that now. Haley has no worries. Be in heaven and sing with the angels. It's my job to get this done. I'm the mom. I'm your voice. You know, what I'll say about Billie Jean is that she no longer lives in Colorado City. She has moved away, but she stays in close contact with DPS and Texas Rangers, and she's completely open and cooperative with authorities. and she remains vigilant. You know, she currently runs a Facebook group called Hope Haley Dunn. And not only is she giving updates about Haley's case and continuing to hold out hope for a resolution and an arrest, but she's also promoting other cold cases around the state. Of course, we know she had an interest in true crime, and she's definitely making that a positive on this website and trying to help other victims and victims' families. So that's good to know that she's staying cooperative and being positive and trying to do something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Clint Dunn says that he still holds out hope for something from authorities and the joint task force that will bring justice for his daughter, and that he remains heartbroken. The Texas Rangers have reportedly confirmed that they still consider Sean Adkins a major suspect and the focus of their murder investigations in the disappearance of Haley Dunn. They told local television stations recently that the case is still very active, and they do not consider it a cold case, and that they continue to receive tips to this day. Haley Dunn's case remains on the Texas Rangers' unsolved homicide list to this day. I just recently checked right before we started the podcast. It's still up, and the Texas Crime Stoppers program is offering a cash reward of up to $3,000 for any person who provides information resulting in an arrest of a person or persons responsible for this crime. You can call their tip line at 1-800-252-TIPS. That's T-I-P-S. If you have any information regarding Haley's case, but you're not interested in the tip line for the reward, and you would like to talk to Texas Rangers directly, you can reach them at 512-424-2160. Or you can reach the FBI's Texas's offices directly at 972-559-5000.
Yeah, and we'll link to all of those things and all of that extraneous information in our show notes and all of our social media as well, so you can quickly get to that information. Well, Shay, thank you for researching that. I'm sure it wasn't the easiest thing to cover, but a very important case, I think, and one that I'm very interested in seeing a resolution towards.
Yeah, me too. It wasn't fun. It leaves us with heavy hearts.
Yeah, it really does. It's such a sad case.
But, you know, I have hopes for the future of this investigation, and we'll definitely keep you guys posted, so.
Yeah.
Oh, good news?
Yeah, I mean, with such a sad case, it feels kind of odd to be moving on to good news, but we do have a very nice story that has hit the rounds right now, and I think you guys will all like it. So let's go ahead and talk about some Texas good news. Well, this story comes to us from Lamarck, Texas, which is a little town just south of Houston. And you might have heard this story before. It's made its rounds kind of on the national level of news coverage, which is kind of cool. It all started one morning earlier this month when a lady named Laura Wolf, she was at a Waffle House eating some breakfast like you do on a Saturday morning. Sounds fantastic. Get their waffles. They're great.
I love my hash browns scattered, covered, cap covered.
Ooh.
Wait, I said covered twice. You can cover them twice. It's fine.
It's just extra cheese. I mean, nobody's going to say no to that.
Yeah, maybe peppered.
Well, she was sitting there having her breakfast when she noticed that the waitress, her interaction with this older man. Now, this older gentleman, he had an oxygen tank. He was having trouble cutting up his food. And he kind of mentioned it to the waitress saying, oh, you know, my hands are really hurting. I'm having trouble eating. And without hesitation, the waitress grabbed his plate and cut up his food for him and then gave it back to him and went on with her business. Now, the restaurant was really busy. You know, she was probably doing 30 things at once. But Laura Wolf saw this, and she saw this just really kind interaction between this waitress, who was very busy, and this older gentleman who was having trouble eating. And she thought it was just a really nice thing to see. Again, you know, one person helping out another in a way that, you know, maybe she didn't have to. And so she saw this occurring. She snapped a photo of it and posted it on Facebook with a little article or a little description about what happened. And this Facebook post ended up going viral. It ended up being shared over 70,000 times. And that was, I think, last week's stats. So it's probably gotten shared even more by now. It made its rounds, and people were very impressed that this young woman, her name was Ebony Williams. She's 18 years old and a waitress at Waffle House. And a lot of people were impressed by this. Again, just like a very nice little simple thing that she did to help somebody else's day out. The mayor of the town got wind of this. He said, "We're going to make March 8th, 2018, Ebony Williams Day."
Oh, wow.
In celebration of her kind act. So this post made its way to be seen by the Texas Southern University president, Austin Lane. He saw it and he decided that he was going to put together a scholarship for Ebony Williams to attend that university. And they presented her with a check for $16,000 towards her college education. And it was given to her by the mayor on the day where he announced the Ebony Williams Day.
Wow.
Yeah. All of this from just a very simple interaction, just a little bit of kindness. And I think it says a lot about her, but I think it also says a lot about all the people who shared and were so interested in this story, because I think at the end of the day, that's what we all like and what we all enjoy, is seeing a little bit of kindness out there in the world and being able to share that with others, I think is something that's really special. And so Ebony, she's going to be continuing to work at Waffle House. She's going to be starting her college career next semester at Texas Southern University. And she's going to be going into business management, and she is hoping to one day open her own restaurant.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. We love the Waffle House.
We used to go there quite often.
Man, if we'd go to a music show or something afterwards, we'd go hit the Waffle House.
There's nothing better than that gross, greasy, cheesy deliciousness that is a Waffle House breakfast.
Yeah, and you know, the wait staff there is always really on their game, because they have to deal with, you know, horrible people like us coming in at 3 in the morning. One of my favorite Waffle House staff members, I still remember his name, was Mike. He was a manager that would come onto his shift right about 2 o'clock in the morning, and he would do a magic show. And we would always be there to watch Mike's
magic show. Oh, God, right at 2 o'clock for all the drunks.
Uh-huh. And it was great. He would levitate, like, dollar bills and stuff and do all kinds of crazy sleight of hand. It was awesome.
Oh.
It became a thing where after we got done drinking, we were like, oh, man, we got to go catch the magic show.
That's awesome. Yeah. He needs his own day along with Ebony Williams.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, do you want to get into some 5-star rating reviews?
I would love that, Shay.
Excellent.
So remember, if you leave us a 5-star review on either Facebook or iTunes, we will read your review on air and you will love it. You can also contact us at Twitter. We are at ACNC Podcast. We have an Instagram at All Crime No Cattle. And if you just search Facebook for All Crime No Cattle, our Facebook page will come up, and there you can enjoy some of our delicious posts and give us our rating and do whatever you want, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You can comment. You can suggest things.
Yep. And remember, you can always shoot us some questions, comments, or dumb remarks at our Gmail account at allcrimenocattle@gmail.com. You can also use that to give us a little bit of a tip through PayPal or whatever service you would like. All right. Let's start with our Facebook reviews. Shay, would you like to begin?
Olivia tells us, not only just 5 stars, but very well researched and performed. I binge listened and hope to be caught up soon. Thanks. I don't know why you'd hope to be caught up. Then you got nothing left.
I know. That's always the worst, is when you catch up to a show.
Especially when we don't release our episodes when we're supposed to.
Shh, don't talk about it.
Candace says, 5 stars. Love the chemistry between Shay and Aaron. This has become my favorite podcast. Your favorite?
I don't know if I would say we're in favorite territory. We're okay. If you need a favorite, I can probably give you some recommendations that are better than us.
This is all being cut.
Thank you, though. I love it.
And not to be forgotten, Joe and Kara gave us 5 stars, but didn't feel the need to take up your precious time with a lengthy comment. We still respect it and love it.
All right, switching over to iTunes, Nell T says, love this podcast. Always on the lookout for anything about Texas. I found this podcast, which combines Texas and true crime. Aaron and Shay are great hosts, and the podcasts are filled with interesting content. As many have mentioned, the hosts have excellent chemistry and banter. Given that they're married, I would hope they do. Thanks for your hard work, Aaron and Shay. Well, you're very welcome, Nelty. It's all a ruse, though.
Oh, gosh.
We're really in the middle of divorce proceedings.
I mean,
I get the dogs.
You would think that if you saw us like 15 minutes before we're supposed to be somewhere.
What's that supposed to mean? We're going to have words after this now.
There's another one here from Credit Shark, and they say, loving it.
But good.
They also go on to say, hey, y'all, I'm a fellow Texan, and I love the podcast. And they put that in all caps. I drive overnight to all places, Dallas, and after finding your podcast, it made my 10-hour round-trip drive much easier. Looking forward to many more episodes in the future. By the way, huge serial killer fan. Some more episodes of the Lone Star Lunatics would be fantastic to me. Keep up the great work. So we got a Lone Star Lunatic series fan here.
I know.
Yep. Those are our series episodes, which you should know by now.
Well, not necessarily.
People are going to be happy because my next episode is going to be a Lone Star Lunatic series case. And it's one that I've been promoting.
Maybe. Maybe you'll get around to it one day.
I'm cutting that.
I don't like this power. You're so, like, the power has gone to your head. Anything I say, pretty soon it's just going to be me completely cut from the podcast.
It's just going to be me talking to myself.
That's what you enjoy the most anyway.
I'll have, like, your parts put in by one of those auto-generated computer voices.
And then it just always agrees with you.
What a great point, Shay.
All right. Sasquatch 83420 says, a good find. Happy to find a new true crime addiction. And we're happy to find you, Sasquatch.
Man, I wonder where he's getting his internet if he's a Sasquatch. But I'm happy he's found it in the woods.
That's right. Kat Thompson says, glad I did it. I was skeptical at first because when I started the podcast, the host did a lot of talking, which is a total turnoff when you don't know or care about your host yet. I'm now on episode 3 and I'm hooked. I like when y'all dig in and do things like read the crazy guy's journal entries. We listen to true crime for those weird and creepy details. P.S. Love the intro. Not cheesy at all. Super appropriate. I love the more Old West kinds of crimes. P.S.S. Go Cowboys. Awesome. Thank you. We do plan on doing more Old West style, or I guess more Old West themed crimes. We have a couple that we're kind of looking into that we want to do. So those should be exciting. Some cowboys and some whatever this is.
Banditos.
Some cattle rustlers.
Oh, God. Deb in Texas says, tragic story, but left 5 stars. This was a great story. I vaguely remember this happening, and it's a tragedy that needs to be told. Yes, he did murder his father, but I wonder why it took him so long. I didn't mean that in a callous way, but no one deserves to be executed. I would have voted for a lenient sentence, and I think 3 years was appropriate. Y'all are fun, local, and super hosts. I'm catching up with all the episodes. Thank you so much for bringing this case to light again. If you see something, say something. Lots to unpack there.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you for the review. I believe she is referring to episode 2, Northside Patricide.
Yep. Bill Butterfield and his son, Lance.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of feedback on that episode.
Okay. One more.
Finally for today, Bristlecone says, excellent. I love the chemistry between the hosts and the way they cover less known crimes. Great job. Smiley face. Thank you, Bristlecone. We appreciate it.
I like
it. We do. Thank you guys for all of your reviews. They're really great. They help us on the back end of the podcast, help us kind of get our names out there. We really appreciate hearing what you guys have to say, good or bad, but we love when it's good.
Yeah. And, you know, we've broken into the top 100 in U.S. history podcasts.
Is that true? I'm not sure if I believe that.
Yes.
I don't believe it.
Well, thank you guys for your support and your 5-star reviews. It helps a lot. And we're seeing the podcast grow and we're doing really well. So,
yay.
All right. Well, we have to talk about our partners in true crime, our promoted podcast this week. It's one of my favorite podcasts that I'm really into right now. If you dig our style of podcasting, which is conversational, and you like podcasts like Last Podcast on the Left, then you're probably going to like this particular podcast.
It is called Las Mordia, and I believe they are from Ohio, but they do cases from all over. It's three friends who are hanging out, and they've done a lot of really interesting cases. They're really funny.
They're hilarious.
Yeah, they've got a lot of back and forth. They're funny, but they're also really sensitive to the things that they talk about, and they, you know, never make fun of the victims or anything. So that's a really great combo that I always really look to find when I'm looking for a, you know, new conversational true crime podcast. I like that combination a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're really great. You should go check them out. And it's actually a good time to check them out because I believe they're just coming back from having a little bit of a break. So I think that their next newest episode is going to be coming out this week. So it's a perfect time to go check them out, go listen to their backlog, and then you'll be ready for their newest episode.
Man, when do we get a break?
We don't do breaks.
Oh, okay.
Christmas, I guess.
My birthday, I'm not going to put out a podcast. I'm just saying that.
Well, hopefully it's my week that week.
Okay. I'm not editing it my week either. Or I'm not editing it my birthday either.
Oh my God. Cut this. We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Well, with that, do you have anything else, Aaron? Or is it time to say our farewells?
It is time to say goodbye.
The sun has set in the western horizon of this true crime case. I hope you enjoyed it. And of course, we will see you next time. But until then, always remember, crime is bigger in Texas, y'all. Adios.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Lucy Mortem.
And my name is Jenny.
And we invite you to join us every week on Las Mordia, where we discuss our favorite true crime topics.
But not just true crime, any and all things dark and mysterious that pertain to the human psyche. Cults, conspiracy, weird pop culture.
But hey, we're not professionals, and we're often inappropriate. We really bank on you finding that charming, though. So turn out the lights, lock the doors, and find us on your favorite podcast app.